been an absolute minute, Tina.
Yeah, a minute, 5 weeks, I don't know.
As the kids say. It as has the kids say. I think we did one episode in a 5 week span, was it? Not to like, I guess, make our listeners remember how poor we've been the last month. We do apologize. I will take most of the blame. I'd say like 85% of it I will take. Obviously 2 weeks was because you were in Hawaii. I think we both didn't realize in terms of the editing things of trying to get episodes
done.
Yeah,
we didn't really think about that.
So we could take half the blame with that. And then last 2 weeks were just fully my fault. It's just, it's sometimes a tough part of the year. It's when all four major sports are playing and, you know, some of them are in playoffs. And so my team, the Yankees, were in the playoffs, plus Cowboys had a couple of nighttime games. It's just been, it's just been tough, but the Yankees suck.
You got a lot of shit for being both a Yankees fan and a Cowboys fan.
Living in Philadelphia too. Yeah, it's so crazy. I get so much shit from everybody, from people like in the dating scene. I get like from friends, obviously, from random people that I meet. Some people
don't really give you a lot of shit about it.
No, but because you're a Steelers fan.
Yeah, that's true. And
I mean, you are a Phillies fan, but. And I think me being a Sixers fan helps a little bit, especially for you, because, you know, you are, I would say that it's football, basketball, baseball for you in terms of, you know. But like some people are like truly like, the word I would use is disgusted. And then I see those people, I'm like, how could you be so angry with me? Like, you know how old I am. If you don't, you at least know I'm in the range of whatever. Like, I have had no success. I have been miserable. Outside of 2009 Yankees World Series, I have truly been miserable. Cowboys have won like three playoff games. The Yankees have sucked for the past 12 years in the playoffs. They've lost the Houston Astros what feels like 17 years in a row.
Well, fuck the Astros because they're a bunch of cheaters.
They're cheaters. It's fucking miserable that they're really good and have young players again. And then I'm a fan of the Sixers. The one team I could fit in with this fucking shit city. And they're fucking garbage. They got a garbage
terrible.
Got a garbage coach. Their bench is terrible. So I just don't win in any sense. And then you got people being mad at me. And my one of my number one pet peeves is especially is in the dating world when like I hate. And you don't do this, but when girls like just go with the flow to fit in with the city to like get a picture or a Snapchat like that. That is like nails on a chalkboard to me. It's so unattractive. Like, do not fucking pretend that you are this diehard Phillies fan or this diehard Eagles fan just to fit in with this fucking stinky city and their stinky fans. It drives me absolutely.
Philadelphia nuts. Does stink.
So that's
like it there. Literally smells bad in Philadelphia.
It does. And so, like, when you're giving me shit on a first date or on a dating app, like, shut up. Like, shut the fuck up. Like, unless you're truly a fan, and then, okay, I can respect it. I understand. Phillies and Yankees aren't exactly rivals, but when you're a Yankees and a Cowboys fan, you get shit for just, you know, picking the biggest organizations in sports.
At least you're not a Lakers fan.
That's true. For many reasons. Thank God I'm not a Lakers fan. For many reasons.
One time this guy asked me who my favorite football team was, and he said that was like ghosting worthy, and he straight up ghosted me, and I was like,
some people are straight up weirdos about like stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I could never.
I just think it's so bizarre.
Like, could you, if you were seeing somebody and everything was really going well, but they were a diehard Ravens fan, like that wouldn't be a deal breaker for you, would it?
I don't think so. I'd definitely struggle, but you know.
Like, for me, if a lot of the boxes are checked and we're having a great time and I know she's a diehard Eagles fan, like, yeah, it wouldn't be fun, but, like, it's not. Yeah,
like, I think it's more the fact, like, it depends on who they are, you know? Like, if they're an asshole about it, then, yeah, fuck you, I'm out. But, yeah, you
and
know,
that's more
if
of a personality thing than anything
Right, yeah. Yeah, no, but I'm with you. Even on, like, dating profiles, every dude is, like, go Birds. And I'm like, that's not like your personality. Yeah, like, I'm going to assume that you're probably an Eagles fan, given where you live. Mm-hmm. But, like, holy shit, I don't give a fuck about your favorite football team.
Mm-hmm. It should not be one of four prompts on a dating app.
No. And
especially, I see it on the girl side of things. What I see is typical Sunday, Birds and mimosas, or, like, lazy Sunday with the Birds, or, like, puke yep. rally in the birds. And it's like,
oh my fucking God. Guys do the same thing. It's ridiculous. I'm like, I don't. Yeah, what do you do?
It's not during me football too. Season. Like, you're going to get mad at me. I'm the one as a Cowboys fan that has to hang around with you and all of your fucking stupid ass friends that are most likely all fake Eagles fans or a bit fake. Like, it's harder for me.
Yeah.
Like, why are you getting mad at me for being a Cowboys fan? I didn't pick this life. It just kind of happened to me. And
yeah.
I'm the one.
You don't choose the family that you're born into. And, you know, you just inherit whatever sports team typically they're fans of.
I blame my father. It's so weird, too, because my dad is one of 10. And, like, usually it's just passed down. But yeah. I think when you're bigger families like that, and especially a family that he had a background of, like, you know, difference in ages, and he right. lived with, like, his grandmother for a couple of years with a couple of the brothers. Like, they kind of – not split up, but there was different time periods of, like, who they're closest with being such yeah. a big family. So it's just strange. Like, one of his brothers is a diehard Steelers fan. One of his brothers is a diehard, like, a true Chiefs fan. Then there's a couple Cowboys fans, there's an Eagles fan, so like it's weird how it's kind of all split up you know, throughout the family. But you know, my kids are stuck with being a Cowboys fan, a Yankees fan. I will let them choose their basketball fandom, but Cowboys and Yankees are non-negotiable for the kids that are being born with the Calpin last name. Yeah, and that's kind of where we're at. It's been a crazy time to live in Philly right now. Obviously the Phillies are on an absolute all-time run, last team in the playoffs, and they were the first team in the World Series. Eagles are still undefeated. I don't know how the Flyers are doing, and like I said, the Sixers, the only Philly team that I like, are struggling to start.
1-3.
Struggling. Not looking good. Not a good 1-3, because their one win is against a bottom Pacers, three team, and they lost to a bottom three team in the Spurs as well. So,
yeah. Well, the Spurs were actually kicking the shit out of the Timberwolves, which was a little surprising. So, like, I don't know. Are the Spurs underrated?
I think what I saw a tweet, and I think it really sums it up well, is the Spurs are not a good team. But if you're not prepared going into a Greg Popovich-led team, they're never going to, like, they will always be prepared with a good game plan, effort, and like, knowing what they need to do. They don't have the best players, and that's a fact. They don't have the talent to line up with a lot of the teams. But if you think you're just going to roll over and be able to go and play the Spurs and think that just because they're not as talented as you guys and win, that just won't happen, just strictly because of, you know, Popovich is really the main reason. So I thought that was true. So I don't think they're underrated. I just think that they're super well coached, and it's one of those teams that's going to give effort night in and night out, and they're never going to roll over. They got a lot of young guys, you know, they're in kind of a rebuild phase.
I'm into that for them.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, Kenny Pickett has whoo, that boy, I'll tell you what, you know, small hands, little mittens,
that's
I think that's so fucking cute. I'm absolutely calling him Little Mittens forever.
That's such a shitty nickname for a quarterback. Can you imagine trying to be a badass quarterback in the league and your fucking nickname is Little Mittens or Baby Mittens or whatever the fuck it is?
I think it's so great. And I love that it was Ryan Clark that said that to a former Steeler.
Yeah, like a diehard Steeler.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I love it so much. You know... Yeah, I mean, that was a really terrible game on Sunday night. That was very hard to watch, but he's one of those young guys that just, like, puts it all out there. And he's like, I mean, they were getting their asses kicked against the Bills, but he was doing what he had to, like, he wasn't fazed.
You have an uphill battle for sure. You're also kind of in a rebuilding phase, which is new in a Mike Tomlin-led team. And for you, I mean, you guys have had such success, you know, maybe not Super Bowl championship success, but just consistently solid team success.
Two Super Bowls since from Ben. So I mean, you think about it, he was the quarterback for the Steelers for 18 years.
Yeah,
that is the majority of my life.
You can't be mad about. I don't even think it's a rebuild. You got some really good pieces on defense, but in this league, you really can only go so far as like how ready your quarterback is. I think teams like the Bears and the Steelers and the Patriots, like you see it around the Titans, like you see it around the league, the Colts, you know, you can only go as far as having a ready quarterback that can win you games. There's very few mm-hmm. teams that are good enough everywhere else where a game manager will get it done. But yeah. This is not a sports podcast, although I've done many of them. This is episode 106, although you're probably seeing 107 on your screen. We're working to get it fixed. Of Roll the Credits.
We have tried to fix it so many times. I can't figure it out.
Hopefully I'll maybe send
it. I think you should probably take a look.
I'll try to take a look. This is Roll the Credits. It's been a while. We're going to be diving into Tom Holland today. I don't know any big news before we dive into our episode. I know obviously we haven't chatted.
I mean, I don't think big news. I had a busy past couple of weekends. 2 weekends ago, I was visiting some friends in Charlottesville, Virginia. That was a lot of fun. This past weekend, I was in Baltimore, Maryland, visiting other friends, which was also a ton of fun. I got to go to the Baltimore Aquarium.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. The jellyfish were so fucking cool. Before. Yeah, that was the first time I was there since I was probably like, I don't know, 5. Mm. I was really sad while I was there, though, just thinking about how large the ocean is and thinking about how tiny the Baltimore Aquarium is. I was like, ooh. Yeah,
you can't let yourself go there. It's a very cool experience to be at high, you know, big zoos and aquariums. But then you really think of it, you're like, oh, this is really, truly terrible for the animals.
It really is, yeah. But yeah, you know, nothing huge. Just, you know, had those two things. I know you were out and about a bit as well.
Yeah, we had Ty's bachelor party a few weeks ago. Fantastic time. And it was a truly like, you know, the house, and not, this isn't to toot my own horn because there I had help with it, but like the house that was found was just, I mean, it was immaculate. It, for the price and the pool, a hot tub, a basketball court, a volleyball court, a game room, a bar, huge house, mini beds. That's awesome. On the water, you could take kayaks out, huge yard, fire pit. It was great. I mean, the weather was fantastic. It's one of those houses, and somehow, some way, on a bachelor party, we managed to not do any damage to the house, and great. Also only got one noise complaint, and it was at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the first day when we were just out playing basketball. So I got a call, and I said, I figured in that moment, like, I'm either going to have to apologize and deal with it because it's only going to get louder, or I'm going to have to say, hey, we're just out playing basketball with some music playing. Like, I will try to be cognizant of it. But just wanted to make you aware that, like, it's the middle of the afternoon on a Friday and we just arrived and we're
playing basketball.
Yeah, with some music playing. And so after I said that, there was nothing else. And we got, as you can imagine, much louder on Friday night and Saturday night, and there was no other complaints. Even got a review back of 5 stars saying, welcome awesome. Back anytime. So I think it will be somewhat of a tradition if we can, because it's the perfect distance. It's like a 2-hour drive. It's on its own island, and there's so much to do at that house. And then we went into the city one night, and there's obviously a lot of fun, a lot of bars. So if you want to go in the city, get dinner, go out, you could do that. But you have enough to do, especially if you get a big group of friends to just hang at the house all weekend. So we're hopefully going to make it a tradition. It was a ton of fun. But outside of that, not too much. I've been wrestling, and obviously, this is a podcast of movies and, you know, real life and feelings and things. Sorry, my phone is buzzing like crazy about an Amber Alert.
Oh.
Gray Volkswagen Jetta PA. Okay. So I've been wrestling with a new feeling that, emotion. I don't even know how to describe it. I've been trying to journal a lot more the last couple of weeks. It's something that I wanted to get into more this year, and I feel like I haven't done a good job of it. And I don't know why. I think you do it. I mean, I think we've talked about you journaling.
Yeah. You know, I've been not doing it very much lately. So I also, like, I feel that.
It's like, I don't know why.
It's hard to keep up with.
It's just hard. It's difficult for me to, like, sit down and be like, okay, let me put all my thoughts to paper. I don't know. I've found it more difficult than I imagined. But the last couple of weeks have been a little bit easier. I've been wrestling with the feeling that isn't positive nor negative. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. I think in this world, as we get older, you have the tendency to feel like life is moving around you, especially when, you know, I work fully remote, as do you. And I love it. And I don't really think I would want it any other way. But I'm a very structured individual. So like I get up, I have my morning meeting, I walk Sunny, I come back, I do work for a couple of hours, I then have breakfast, whatever. And I finish the day, I walk Sunny, come back, sit down with my pre-workout, watch 20 minutes of a show, and then I go to the gym. That is my regimen 90% of the work week. And so I think I was like having that weekly, and while work is has its ups and downs, I think what when it hit me was when I saw some guys that I hadn't seen in a while at the bachelor party, and they say like, hey, what's up, what's new? And I didn't really have an answer for them. Like I haven't seen them in 6 months, some of them longer, and these are like some of my best friends. And I was like, well, I don't, like, what am I supposed to sit here and talk to you about work? Am I supposed to sit here and talk to you about like, like not a lot has changed. There's been no major changes in my life. And I think there's so many major changes that are around me in such positive and loving ways. And I'm so happy for those people. But I think the feeling that I in between is like unfulfillment / boredom, but not in a negative way, if that makes sense. Like I'm not unhappy, and I'm not like, I look forward to my structured day. Works, like I said, work is work for everybody. I don't find that as like meticulous to talk about as maybe something to do. But then I think like, okay, like I need to find a way to broaden my ability to utilize parts of my brain that aren't being worked when you work fully remote and other things. Right. You're not as much human interaction. You're not using certain parts of your brain. You feel like you're good at what you're good at this point. So I've been journaling about that more and more. And I think what I want to do is to try to like learn new skills or try new things, more often. And so I think what I'm going to take up is it was weird. It just kind of all happened in the last couple of weeks. And I was at my gym and I saw somehow it's in my gym, a like, you know, one of those pull tabs. Like if you want to like see a lost cat or something, you pull contact information. I saw like piano lessons for adults in my gym. And I was like, well, that's interesting. Like I've always thought like it'd be cool to like be able to just kind of play the piano. And that's something that I've never done. Like I've never, I'm not artistically, you know, kind of inept in any way. And I'm not musically strong in any areas. Obviously,
I hear you.
This is a form of art. And I know that you've been, you know, doodling or trying to, you know, get into art more on the, you know, kind of graphic design and drawing area. I was like, you know what, this is, I'm not a huge believer in signs or anything like that, but I was like, why is this at my gym? And like, how did I see it shoved in the corner?
Right.
So yeah, so I think that's, whether the piano thing comes to fruition or not, I think that is the feeling that I've been toying with of like, trying to be in the moment, not let life pass you by, understand that everybody's timelines are different. And I'm not just talking about like engagements and houses.
Right. Yeah, no, totally.
But that's no, just, that's what I've been toying with.
I know what you mean. Like I'm the same way. Like, I mean, that's literally why I started doing like some digital art stuff. I was like, you know what? I kind of like, I want to broaden my horizons and I want to do things that, like, I don't want the same day to day every single day. So like for me, you know, I do that. I'm a very avid audiobook listener. I love audiobook. Like it's nice to just like kind of get lost in a story. It's fun to write. It's fun to, you know, I think for me, like I really like music and concerts and stuff. So that's something that I like try to do. Always down to just like try new music or, you know, big foodie over here, definitely like new foods, new recipes, that sort of thing. I think it's definitely easier though, excuse me, in certain stages of life. For example, during the pandemic, like when we were like deep into it, I was purchasing like these farm boxes, I want to say, that like a produce box basically, and everything came like directly from the farm. And it had like all these different things in it, and some of the stuff I had no idea what the fuck it was. So I would like look it up and then I would just like figure out a recipe and I would just make it.
Mm-hmm.
And like that was fun. Like that was a way to kind of like, you know, use parts of my brain that I wasn't using. I was locked in my house with three other people and, you know.
Yeah. I think like, I think it's just so easy if you're the type of person that I think we both are, like a little bit type A, a little bit, you know, structured to get in such a routine. And again, this, I think the hardest part for me to wrestle was like me writing it down or talking to myself or now talking to you guys. Like it's so easy to come out like, oh, you're unhappy or you're bored. Like it's not a negative feeling for me, but it feels very easy to just kind of get stuck in a routine. And I think you don't have to like learn a new skill and be like a master at it. Like I'm not trying to be like a master pianist, like, but
if I could
learn how to play a couple songs on the piano and work a part of my brain that I probably haven't worked in so long, you know, I think that that's a success, whether I do anything with it or whatever. Like that's a way to meet new people. It's a way to just learn a new skill. And the cooking thing, you know, whether it's you're learning to cook, you're learning to play an instrument, you're learning to knit or sew or whatever. Like there's so many different things. And I think it's just got to step outside your comfort zone a lot. I heard something from actually a podcast I listened to that that kind of stuck with me, is that courage starts on the other side of trying.
Yes.
And I think like that's so true. And I think that, again, this all happened in a couple of weeks. I'm not a big believer in signs or any of that hoopla, but that is very true. Like it's so easy to just get in your little bubble, be good at it and be fine, be happy, be content. Especially at our age where like a lot of things aren't changing. Like you see, like I said, you see people every 6-12 months sometimes and you're like, oh, no major life updates here. And that's not that out of the realm of normalcy. So I think like trying to step outside of your comfort zone can bring you courage, can allow you to meet new people, can maybe bring you closer to something you never knew that you would be have a, you know, a could be a big part of your life moving forward. So that's it. That's just my little spiel of not being on here for the last couple of weeks, being able to talk. This to me, as I always said, is like therapy for us. And
it is.
It's why we started the podcast. Hopefully why you guys enjoy listening to it, but we will get to the movies now. I will let Tina start off with her Tom Holland movie for episode 106 of Roll the Credits.
All right. So I watched The Devil All the Time, starring Tom Holland, Bill Skarsgård, Robert Pattinson is in it. I had this written down and I can't find my piece of paper right now. So bear with me for one moment. I feel like I watched this forever ago because I kind of did, because we weren't positive about, you know, the timing of everything. Haley Bennett, Kristen Griffith, Sebastian Stan, Jason Clarke. Yeah, so you get the idea. And it was a really depressing movie. And it did a lot of shifting back and forth between generations. And basically, it was sort of about how faith and evil are intertwined. And it had like a huge theme of fathers and sons and how trauma and grief are passed down from generation to generation. And I would say there are next to no bright spots in the movie.
love that for you.
Yeah, it was a weird watch. It was a weird watch. While I was watching it, there were certain times where I started to feel like a little uncomfortable as I was watching it. And I kind of tried to unpack that and like figure out why I was feeling a little uncomfortable. And I think when I see more of like a rural way of life connected to deep, deep Christianity or like evangelicalism, that I can't wrap my head around it because I don't understand it and I've never experienced it firsthand. You know, I've never been in a situation where I've been in a very rural area and have seen people sort of interacting in that way. I think a lot of what I tend to normally watch is a bit more relatable. And like, to be fair, this movie again takes place across, it's like post-World War II. You know, soldiers are coming home with PTSD. Obviously that, it, like, you know, we see it in a different way, with like soldiers coming home from the Middle East most recently, like with PTSD and that sort of thing. But the world was just so different then. So, you know, you don't have as much information. You don't have as much transparency. You don't have all of these different, like, education's just totally different. So it was, and I mean, oh my God, ideals, obviously, ideals, morals, that sort of thing. You know, it was sad. It was sad. It was showing kind of how fucked up the world was. And, you know, it still is fucked up. But it was mostly, again, like the trauma and grief and how that trauma and grief from one generation went to the next and how it impacted the following generation. And it's like, how do you stop that cycle? Yeah. Anyways, IMDb gave it a 7.1. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 64%. I gave it a 7 on the dot.
You love that score.
I do.
Was Tom Holland the main guy in it?
Technically, it was Bill Skarsgård, but he and Bill Skarsgård, like, Bill Skarsgård was his dad. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, it's just so hard to, like, kind of put myself, it, like, I can't empathize with any of it. I can't sympathize with it. Like, I just don't. It's so out of what I know, and it's so out of, like, my realm of understanding. But what is not out of my realm of understanding is how trauma and grief is passed down from generation to generation. So I kind of wanted to discuss that, and, like, how, you know, like, it doesn't necessarily have to be, like, your specific personal life. It could be, like, examples of how you've seen it and that sort of thing, but just to kind of highlight that and kind of talk about how people overcome it. And I kind of feel like now we are a part of a generation that is aware of it. And we are aware that we can actually not reverse it, but kind of mitigate it to a pretty solid degree, because, you know, our generation is filled with people who are open to things like therapy and open to speaking about their feelings. Like, it wasn't, nobody talked about any of that back then, none of it. And, you know, it's sad. It's really sad to see how badly people struggle when they can't be themselves or they can't be honest with what's going on inside of them. So yeah, like what you just said earlier, like, I appreciate you saying that, because you're like, that's a big deal. Like, you have to talk about things. So, like, when did you first start feeling okay talking about things, like saying things that maybe weren't so comfortable, but now you're okay with doing it because you feel better afterwards, or you've gotten responses from people you've confided in and that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's a little bit difficult for me, as you said, to empathize with the full, I guess, subject of this, because I consider myself very fortunate to not really have every single person in the world has some sort of baggage, big or small, has trauma, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But I consider myself very fortunate and find it sometimes difficult to empathize for a question like this, because I don't feel like there's been major life crises or incidents that have caused me deep, deep trauma. I'm sure there are underlying things that have eroded at me to the core and has kind of, you know, become a centric part of, you know, me becoming who I am as a person. But it's not like I can stick back and be like, oh, let me talk about this that happened when I was growing up, or let me talk about,
yeah, this,
you know, it's hard, a little bit difficult for me to empathize, but you know, what I can say is I do think that we're in a major shift in our generation, like you mentioned, of opening up about it. You're seeing more and more people in the spotlight talking about mental health, mm-hmm. and writing memoirs and going on book tours. And, you know, obviously Matthew Perry's doing it in his battle with addiction. Tom Felton from Harry Potter just released a memoir as well in his battle with depression and anxiety. Obviously these are stars, and so it's different. People look at celebrities and, you know, but they're people too.
Absolutely.
So I think it's great that this push of talking and opening up about mental health, and especially I think there's a stigma around it for males where, mm-hmm. you know, because even our parents, like I know if I was like, you know, dad, you should, you know, talk to somebody, you should go to therapy. Like
my dad would laugh.
It wouldn't even like process in my father's yeah. mind. And it's no knock on him. It's just very different way of, you know, their upbringing. And we were right on that edge. You know, I think our generation and the one to come is really what's kind of pushing that envelope, which I think is great. And for me personally, I always found it easier to talk about things when I am most confident in myself. There are things that make me feel confident, you know, and that is when I am active. That is when I feel like, you know, I am going to the gym consistently, you know, look good, feel good, that type of mentality. Not doing too many stupid things in a week or a month or whatever. You know, when I am at my most confident, I find it simpler to have conversations like we just talked about 20 minutes ago. To confide in conversations with you and friends and family. It's when I am, for whatever reason, not feeling myself as much, I find it a little bit more challenging to open up. And I think that has been the toughest part probably for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And having the confidence to trust in people to talk about difficult things. But I think it's really, really good that we have seen a push from anything from like the national media to education systems, you know, to workplace environments. We've seen so many more mental health days from schools and workplaces. We've seen, like I said, big time stars open up about just immense amount of trauma and past history that they've gone through that you probably would have never known. Yep. And so I think all of that is important to push that right agenda, because there's so many people that suffer in silence and unfortunately, you know, never get the help that they should and the help mm-hmm. that they need. And like I said, it's difficult sometimes for me to empathize because I consider myself fortunate to not be down that deep, dark alley.
Right.
But I think me and you both have definitely things in our past and times in our life where we did go through, you know, difficult times. And I think being able to open up is pivotal and very key to just continuing to push the right stigma around. It is okay to talk to people. It's okay to open up. It's okay to ask for help professionally or just from your inner circle. It doesn't make you weaker. It doesn't make you less of a man or a woman. It doesn't make you anything that you just probably heard growing up. It's you asking for a hand because we really can't get through this life without help, right? Nobody can. So I think I think if there's a small silver lining, and there's been a lot of bad that has been pushed the last 4 years with just everything. You know, there's obviously a lot of issues in this country.
Yeah, the last decade, really.
I think one of the few good things is that mental health reform has really been pushed to the limelight, and I think that's really important and will help a lot of kids. I think it's children that are in middle school and high school that may be going through being bullied or things. Those years shape you as a human. And when you go through an immense period so young of depression and bullying and not having confidence in yourself, it can affect you forever. And I think especially sprinkle in the effects of social media at such a young age and trying to paint this perfect life. And I can't imagine the pressure that you feel as an 11-year-old nowadays. It's unfair. And I think it's good that we are, again, opening up the curtain to kids and adults of all age, that it is, again, okay to go talk to the school therapist or to go have a chat with your guidance counselor or your parents or your friends. Like, you know, that should be the norm.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I think so much of that too is, it all really, I mean, like you said, like, it's hard to talk about when you're going through it. It's more so like when you're going through it, it's easier, I think, to let people know something's going on rather than talking about it. Like, for me personally, it's easier to be like, hey, this is what's going on right now. This is why I'm in this kind of state. Just giving people a heads up and being like, hey, like, I don't, like, I'm not ready to talk about it yet. And having people that respect that boundary. And then once you're ready, you can talk about it. Once you've had time to sort of process it and try and work through a little bit of it on your own. And then, you know, asking for help as you need it. And that's just, again, that's how it is for just me personally. If someone's going through it and they immediately need help, you know, that's how they work, and that's totally fine. I'm totally with you. I really think that mental health is huge, and I really think that we do carry the trauma and grief that have happened to our parents and our parents' parents, and it's just passed down from generation to generation. And, you know, it just looks different. We all experience different traumas and grief in our lifetime. And, you know, I don't use the word trauma lightly, but also trauma doesn't have to be this huge, huge thing that happened to you. Like, it can just be like, oh, this is how I was brought up, and it triggers me in X, Y, Z ways. You know, that's considered trauma. I think the word trauma is a little challenging because I think that word has a lot of stigma to it. Mm-hmm. But you know, like, it is what it is. Like, it's, if shit happens to you, shit happens to you. Say, call it what you want, semantics, whatever. You know, everyone has things. And as those things happen, it's absolutely important to talk to people about it. It's absolutely important to, you know, process it and not just shove it down as far as you can and not think about it and just block that memory out, or those memories in general. And, you know, it doesn't have to be also a specific memory. It can just be like different things that have happened to you over time that cause a specific response in your emotional reaction to something. So yeah, I think it's all just very complex and kind of nitty gritty, really. And that's really what this movie was showing, the nitty gritty of it and how it just impacts people throughout their life and how it impacts the people around you.
I mean, I think even to a certain degree, like we've talked about from the beginning of this podcast, that's kind of what this was all about. Obviously, it was a way for me and you to connect. It was something that I, you know, a hobby and a passion of mine to do podcasting, and also to tie that in with a hobby and passion of cinema and all that stuff. But it also was just to talk about something real. I think, I didn't think I had an avenue a lot of times to talk about some things important or personal or emotional or whatever.
Right.
And I think that this, whatever you can find so many ways for you to be comfortable expressing how you feel, whether it's behind a microphone, with a therapist, with your parents, with your friends, journaling. You know, there's so many ways to talk about it. And, you know, I think it's all important. So hopefully, you know, this podcast can help you guys, you know, think about certain things and open yourselves up. But there's so many different avenues out there that I think, again, are being pushed to the limelight, which is really important. So I'm glad that was your topic. You know, I think it's important to talk about as well. So The Devil All the Time, 7.0. Okay. So my movie, Tom Holland doesn't have a lot of credits. You know, he's obviously done a lot within the Spider-Man universe.
Up and coming, young man.
He is an up and coming star for sure. Obviously, and he's got
man in my 86.
He's got the girl attached to his he's got the right girl attached to his hip. I mean, she's a freaking superstar herself.
Yeah.
So he's the next big star for sure, but I think he's not quite there yet. You know, I think he's got to diversify his portfolio. Like I said, he's done a lot of action and you know, superhero type of films, but I'm trying to figure out how old he is.
I think he's 25.
Yeah. So he was born June 1st of 96. So that means he's like 26. So he's young. I watched one of his newest movies from 2022, Uncharted. This starred Tom Holland, Mark Wahlberg, and Antonio Banderas. A few other guys you might notice. In the first couple of scenes, Tom Holland's character's brother is played by one of the guys in Outer Banks. And do you remember?
Chase Stokes?
No, it's the other one, the other blonde one. I know you don't know his actor name, but what's his character name?
Topper?
Is it Topper? No.
JJ.
JJ, yeah. So JJ is in his film briefly as well. And I guess I won't spoil it. But so this movie, I didn't realize this till after the film, is based off of a video game with the same name. So I am not a big video gamer. And if I do play video games, it's Madden or NBA 2K. So I don't play like the
FIFA guy.
FIFA I've played a little bit, but it's all sports. Like I don't get into the
yeah.
I don't even know what you would call this game, but that's pretty much what it's off of. And so it is. I knew it going into it. It falls into my top two least favorite categories of movies, which is like non-believable action. Like he's falling out of a plane without a parachute, and like
it's ironic that you like fantasy.
What type of fantasy?
I don't know. You like Harry Potter?
Yeah. See, that is like, but I don't really like much else, like Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings. But those are two of the greatest stories of all time. And I guess Game of Thrones too. But it's different. It's when you can create a world that I believe in.
What about Narnia? Did you like those?
No, not really. Okay. Like you got to make me believe and wish that that was a real fucking thing so bad. And I wish so much that Hogwarts was real. Anyway, don't get me off on a Harry Potter tangent. This is a little bit different. This is like you're falling out of a plane without a parachute and like grabbing onto somebody in midair. Like the shit that just doesn't happen. Or like you get thrown off of like six stories and you just pop right. Like that just shit just bothers me so much. So that's what it was based. That's what the whole movie is. It's Tom Holland's character, Nathan Drake, Mark Wahlberg's character Sully, and Antonio Banderas plays the bad guy named Moncado. And they're all going after this unburied treasure from the 17th century of billions of dollars in gold. And Nathan's brother, who was kicked out of their orphanage when they were young, has been chasing this his whole life. And he ends up, you know, getting in some trouble when he was chasing this. So Mark Wahlberg's character Sully chases down Nathan to help him kind of finish it off. They go on this crazy adventure through Spain, through all of these different areas and really across the world, I guess, to find this buried treasure. Now, as I describe this, you can only imagine that this is up there for like the least favorite plot for me, just crazy action. However, what I will say is that the chemistry between Mark Wahlberg and Tom Holland, spectacular. Antonio Banderas as a bad guy, great. It keeps the movie afloat for me. And while Tom Holland is like, he's kind of, I don't even know how to describe him. Like, he's kind of boyish still. Like, he was doing all this cool action, but his voice is still like kind of high and like I don't know, like it's hard to describe. He's like, he still strikes me as like a not fully grown. I don't even know how to describe it. But their chemistry is great. I've shockingly really Mark Wahlberg has skyrocketed in the last couple of months on my list of actors that I enjoy, just strictly based. I think we did an episode with him. I've watched a couple of his movies recently. Like, he does do some good work. I mean, I always kind of classified him as just like this big budget action star, but range to him. He's got some comedic range to him. He does some drama pieces. He's really climbing that list for me. And so that is the background of the storyline. IMDb gave it a 6.3. Rotten Tomatoes of 41%. I gave it a 6.6.
Okay.
Like I said, plot has many holes. Action is ridiculous. But the cast, the chemistry, and the ending really helped, you know, kind of bring that to that level. You really can't get much higher than a 7.0 for me in an action movie like that. So it's getting up close to what could be the best of the best in that realm. Okay. So my question was, pretty much the whole time Sully is trying to create this team, he doesn't trust anybody. He's also not trustworthy, but he's trying to create the perfect team to help him discover this gold. If you were out there trying to find lost gold and buried treasure, whatever, and you had to assemble a team of four, including yourself, so you and three additional people,
mm-hmm.
who would you pick and why? Now, obviously, people listening to this podcast probably won't know most of, if not all of the people you name, but that's okay. They might listen to this and hear it, but give me three people in your life that you would take with you to help you discover this gold and why.
So I'm going to go with my friend Nick because he and I did very well on a, it was sort of like one of those murder mission. No, it wasn't murder mystery. We had to figure out a bunch of fucking puzzles for this game. It was like an escape room, but you just did it in like a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, Nick and I worked very well on a team together. So I would choose him. I would choose RJ because, yeah. Sometimes I just like forget how smart she is because she's just so goofy. But I think she'd be good at that. And so I have three people.
So now you're at you, Nick, and RJ. You need one more person.
You know, I think I'd probably take you.
You don't have to say that.
No, I legitimately think I would because
I'm so directionally challenged, Tina.
Oh, yeah, so am I. Oh, honestly, I think Nick is.
You got to have somebody that can direct us.
Shit, who? Okay, fine. Then picking my friend Liv because she's really fucking good at directions.
And like, you're right. And like use a compass. Like not just like.
Oh, yeah, she can read a map. I can't read a map for the fucking life of me. I've tried so many times. I've tried very hard. I have a very hard time with the cardinal directions. I barely know my left from right. And I wear this is really embarrassing, but I wear a bracelet on one hand at all times, so that way I know like which is which. I literally was learning how to drive. I'm not kidding. I was taking driving lessons and my instructor said, okay, turn right. I turned left. Yeah, and I did this multiple times and I legitimately thought I was turning the correct way. That's how bad
it's hard. I mean, I'm not that bad. I mean, left and right's pretty, but I am also very directionally challenged. Left and right's
pretty easy.
just a quick side note. I don't know if I ever told you my driver's test from. I don't know how you guys had to do it, but we did it through our high school.
Okay.
We
had to like take classes in high school.
We had driver's ed.
Driver's ed, but
then we would take our test at the high school, and I know a lot of people.
Oh, we had to go to the DMV.
And you probably had a parallel park, right?
I had a parallel. Yeah,
We didn't have to do that. But
what?
For us, we would like get in the car with the instructor and we would have driving lessons also through the high school. Like, I think we had like 4 to 6. We had to learn how to drive stick shift, whatever. We would do it on like a weekend. And so the driving test was like you would get in and then you would drive to a point where the test would start and then he would start to grade you when you were going through whatever. Like they'd take you through intersections and merging, all this stuff, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But on the way to getting to the point, and I'm driving with my instructor, I run a red light, but he can't fail me because the test hasn't started yet. So I'm sitting with my instructor going through a red light, which is obviously a crime and failable offense in a driver's test. And I look over and I'm like, I'm sorry, I thought I could get there. Like, and then after, I was expecting to fail. Like, I was like, oh, fuck,
yeah.
I failed. And obviously, it's not a huge deal. You can retake it, I think, in like a month or whatever. But then I got back and I like passed, and I was like, I passed. He's like, Yeah, you technically went through the red light before the test began, so I can't dock you points nor fail you for it. Just don't do that again. I'm like, this is how I got my fucking license. Like, I literally ran a red light on my test and I still got my license. This is fucked. Like, you need to fix this. This is fucking terrible. So that's just a side funny story. That's
horrible.
Okay, so to finish up yours, it's you, your friend RJ, obviously, as we all know, our friend RJ, Liz for the directions, Liv, and Nick.
Nick, yep.
That's your roommate.
No, Nick's my friend's husband.
Okay. What is Nick bringing to the table?
Nick's really smart.
Okay. What RJ's also really smart. What do you bring to the table?
Nick's good. Nick and I work really well together. Okay. We're both very calm, cool, and collected. Like, externally. Internally, we're freaking the fuck out and we're anxious. But, you know, externally.
You got no muscle on your squad, though.
Do I need muscle?
Well, you never know. I mean, you're finding lost treasure that other people could be chasing as well. And, like, also...
Okay, well, you told me you suck at directions. I was kind of trying to pick you because I needed, like, a little bit of muscle. So, like, you know.
Well, there's a lot of muscle over here. You don't say a little bit.
My bad. A lot of muscle. An extreme amount of muscle.
Okay, well, you need to lock in. What are you doing?
I'm not taking muscle.
You're not taking muscle?
No.
Okay, so you're doing?
You're doing directions. RJ can run a lot. She can run.
Yeah, okay.
And then, she's running the Philly Marathon.
And she's the one that's deciphering the clues, too, as well as you and Nick.
Yeah, yeah. Liv probably is, too. Liv,
so like, you guys are, honestly, you constructed a smart crew.
Yes. I constructed a smart crew. Okay. And I would like to think that the smart crew would figure out a way to, honestly, yeah.
Okay.
RJ and Liv are more logical.
Mm-hmm.
I think Nick and I would kind of we need some a little bit more direction. Like,
aren't
we need
you
to
and
be...
Liv the two that got stuck on a mountain?
Yes, but that's because she fell and broke her ankle.
Not great. Not great to have on your squad.
Well, you know what? It was an unfortunate time, Unlucky. We're gonna be prepared though. That's the thing we learned from that. We're gonna be prepared.
True. All right, you got a good squad.
Who are you picking?
So myself obviously has to go. I'm taking Brandon because
Bones is probably great at that shit.
He's very quick on his feet. He's smart and like he's street smart, so he's able to pick up on clues. He's also a little. He's like a spider monkey, we call him, because he's very elusive if we ever get into some trouble. He's not strong. He's not going to be able to – but he's gritty.
He's not strong.
He's gritty and he's elusive.
He is. I feel like Bones is the kind of person, like, you expect to – like, he kind of reminds me of Sneaky Pete.
Yeah, that's a great comparison. He is – that's pretty – he'd be pissed because Sneaky Pete's kind of disgusting, but yeah.
Well,
it's a kind of a compliment, like Sneaky Pete's super smart.
Yeah, like the not gross parts about Sneaky Pete.
So him, I need somebody that is – you always need to have a girl on your team, I think, because you never know what kind of trouble you can get in, and girls can help, you know, kind of it settles down maybe some trouble that you're getting in. So who's like really like my – like who's good at that stuff? I'm going to take my friend Morgan. I think that she would be able to, she's really great with people. And I think that's a skill that is necessary in an adventure like this. You need to be able to connect with the people. You need to be able to get information out of the people. So that is why she is being on the squad. And then finally I need somebody that's like also book smart and like directionally smart. Who's my smartest friend? Dieter's very smart, but he's got too much of a temperament.
Sorry, Dieter.
Luke's very smart, but he also has a temperament.
See, Luke was the first one that came to mind for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. I think it might have to be... Oh, okay. I made a mistake. I have to take my brother for all of his skills that he has.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay, I was like, I'm going to kick my fucking self out because he's got everything that I I feel like we – I mean, he's definitely very directionally challenged. I don't think we have the smartest crew like you do, but we got me who can bring muscle and people skills. Mm-hmm. We got my brother who can bring muscle and
– He's a –
survival skills, yeah. Like his training that he has. Yeah,
he can beat the shit out of you.
Yes. We're bringing Morgan because I do think it's important to have a girl on the squad, and she would be great with people and fitting in with the people. And then we're gonna bring Bones for the street smarts. So got me, you. Colin, Morgan, and Bones is my crew to find gold.
I love it.
Cool. All right. Well, that is Tom Holland. That is Uncharted from 2022. I was like looking, I like knew what it was called, but I was like, that looks like I wrote Undrafted. Uncharted 2022, lock it in at 6.6. So as you guys know, like, it has been a while, so maybe you forgot, but it is time for Tina's good news story of the week.
All right, we are going to talk about bike buses this week. They have caught on as a cool way to commute to school. What is a bike bus, you ask? Well,
I do ask.
You do ask. It's an adult-led group bike ride to school, and many families are ditching their cars for a sweatier morning ride with friends, biking miles, organizing clusters led by grown-up volunteers. This is an effort to combat climate change, encourage exercise, and reduce school drop-off traffic. And parents and kids are saying it just makes the kids so much fucking happier, and I can only imagine how exciting it is to get to ride your bike to school every day. You know, I'm sure that's definitely hard in certain areas of the country. My school was – my, like, grade school was not – like, I could not have ridden my bike there.
Mm-mm.
Like – no, I would have cried if I had to, because one, it would have taken forever. Two, there would have been a lot of hills.
That's all you need to say.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, it would have taken, but like the hills were awful. It was a lot of back roads. I went to grade school. It's sort of in Bumblefuck. So
you kind of grew up in Bumblefuck.
No, I grew up in a neighborhood.
You could have taken the horse and buggy.
10 minutes outside of downtown Lancaster.
You have more Amish people in your area than you do just non-Amish people.
That's absolutely untrue.
I've been to Lancaster many times. I have bonded with the Amish people of Lancaster.
When have you hung out with the Amish? What were you doing? I like never saw Amish people growing up. I saw like maybe a handful occasionally.
I've seen hundreds.
Where? What do you do in Lancaster? You're so full of shit.
I'm serious.
What do you do in Lancaster then when you're there?
I hang out with the Amish folk. They teach me to put my phone away, and I don't want to say anything that's going to be offensive, so I should stop. But 100 is exaggeration, but I feel like when I was there and driving, like I would literally see dozens on the road.
Well, to be fair, you were really in like the bumblefuck area of Lancaster when you would be there. So,
but like, I would still be going out in town with like, what were those bars called? Tally Ho? Is that one of them? No.
You went to Tally Ho? That's a gay club.
Is that in Lancaster?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that one. What are some of the other big ones?
Annie Bailey's, Altana, Tullis 360.
Yeah, I remember that one. Which one has the big roof?
Tullis.
Yeah, I went to that one.
Well, Altana does too.
Mm. Sorry,
Tim. Marion Court.
Story with your Amish people.
Man, yeah, no, where you stayed in Lancaster, that's like more bumblefuck than where I grew up. I can't see any farm from my parents' house. I'm sure you could see farms from where you were staying.
Oh, yeah. I was fucking dapping. You're
probably on a farm.
I was playing basketball with the Amish people.
Get out of here. Anyways, that's my good news story. It's about kids riding their bike to work to school.
All right, let me go to the wheel. See what we got.
Please do. Shut me up.
I'm fucking Packers. Okay.
Dude, so does mine. I was stretching earlier, and it just, like, it was cracking as I was stretching. It's like, what the fuck is going on?
Aww.
I looked to my roommate. I was like, it only gets worse from here. How could it possibly be worse?
I actually love this actor. I think he's very underrated. I should say that. I mean, me and you both love him for one thing. But I should really know what else he's been in. Oh,
who is it? Who is it? Let me.
He's in two. Honestly, he's probably in two top 50 movies for me.
Oh, is it Gerard Butler?
No, but it's like an underrated actor for sure. I don't think he's done. He's got 34 credits.
Can you give me a hint?
I would assume that one of these movies is also probably in your top 20, and you just recently watched it for the first time on this podcast.
Oh, fuck. I'm not going to remember that.
I can tell you who you watched it for, but that would probably give it away.
Give me another hint.
Not that one, though?
Not that one. A different hint.
This movie that I'm talking about was from 2012. And the three main people of this film are two that you love and one person that you hate, who's been in a lot of news recently that we both have shared tweets about.
Who do I hate right now?
Maybe you don't hate him, but I'd say you probably hate him. He's been in the news for like such shitty things for months.
Ezra Miller?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He's one of the three.
Perks of a Wallflower.
There you go.
Oh, that guy. Who else is fucking
the main guy? It's the main guy's name. I figured you might not know his name because it's not like.
Is he the guy in 13 Reasons Why? Or am I thinking of someone else? Hold on. No, I don't remember.
Oh, no, you're thinking of Dylan Minnette. But they do look similar. Logan Lerman.
Yes.
Those are good clues I gave, I feel like.
Those are great clues.
Way to get there. So Logan Lerman, Perks of the Wallflower, probably like I said, I don't have a list outside of the top five, but if I sat down, it's probably a top 40 movie for me. And he's also one of the key members in the ensemble cast for Fury, which is probably a top 25, 30 movie for me. So I'm excited to look at some of the other stuff that he's done. I don't think I've seen much else outside of that. He's also, oh my fucking God, I forgot he's in this movie. He's also in a film called Stuck in Love, which is one of my favorite romantic dramas, maybe ever. So this fucking guy might fucking rock, is all I'm saying. He's also in 310 to Yuma. Yeah, this guy rocks. That's all I'm going to say. Tina, we've done this a few times now. If you haven't seen Fury, watch it. And if you haven't seen Stuck in Love, watch it, because they are both. I know you've obviously seen Perks of Wallflower. Those two are phenomenal.
I just like
films.
To say that I was the one that said put Logan Lerman on here.
Great job. Like I said, he's one of those people that you like kind of forget about.
Yeah, he flies probably, under the radar for sure.
You probably told me after you watched Perks of the Wallflower. He does. And then probably. You came to forget his name. So it all made sense.
Yikes.
All right, awesome. I'm looking forward to this one. This will be great. I thought this was also a great episode back. So hopefully you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. We're going to look at Logan Lerman for episode 107 of Roll the Credits next week. As always, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Tina.
Thanks, guys, so much for tuning in. And we talked about a lot of somewhat serious topics this week, and I think it's great. And I think it's just to usher the sentiment of talk to anybody if you're going through something big or small. I think it's really important. Yeah. I think it's great for growth for you, for yourself personally, as well as getting. I think just to wrap this up quickly, like you said, there's a stigma around the word trauma. I think there's stigma around getting help. Of like that has to be such a like a big thing or a serious thing. Like, no, it doesn't have to be that. Asking for help or getting help or whatever, that doesn't mean that something is terribly wrong. So that is all from Roll the Credits. We love you guys, and we look forward to Logan Lerman next week.
Bye.